The following is an interview with Fred G. Karem, K-A-R-E-M, staff aide in the White House Personnel Office. The interview was conducted by Susan Yowell on July 3, 1974, in room 352 of the old Executive Office Building. And would send you a copy of the transcript if it were ever going to be used as a research item in the library for researchers to come in and see what the staff did. Then we would have sent a copy of the draft transcript to you, which you could edit and read the room.
The library arrangement is such that all of the material written and oral become available at the end of the administration?
No, not at all. The president's papers, the president's personal papers, make up the core of the library,
yeah.
And that includes all of the papers that are created by the staff,
yeah,
on the White House. And he is under absolutely no obligation, according to tradition, to give those papers to the governor. They're his personal property. What has happened is that,
yeah,
since Roosevelt, presidential library system has provided an opportunity for the president to give them with restrictions, so that he controls access to them. And
controls access to them until he gives them up.
Well, he may give them with restrictions.
Hello.
The advantage that we have in doing these interviews here is that it's so easy to get such a cross-section of the staff. In ideal terms, we get everyone. Realistically, we don't quite get everyone. But it's such a convenient way not to have to travel all over the countryside.
Yeah.
As the Kennedy Library has interviewed probably more people than any other presidential library. But they had to travel all over the country to do it. It's difficult to set up times and everything else.
Well, would you all go on to the presidential library?
We are an archives staff.
Yes.
And yes, we would.
Those of you who have been working with the project here.
Right.
Y'all would move on with the papers and the materials to the library.
That's right. Now, some of us may stay. There's no obligation on our part to go with the library, however.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons for having the staff here, because once the papers become archives in a presidential library, it will be much easier for an archivist who has some idea of the working relationships in the White House when he's handling those papers and processing them. That's the concept of our office being here and now. As I said, we're asking for very basic information, and we have a rough list of questions which we don't even know.
Separation procedure.
About 3 years now.
For quite a while.
Yes.
Built into the process of individual leaders.
I think that was worked out when John Huntsman was still in the staff.
That long ago.
Okay.
How long have you been here?
I've been here for 4 years.
You have?
Since the fall of 1971. A little less than that. We don't necessarily follow our list of questions at all, but what we're trying to do is just get an outline. So if there's anything that I haven't covered, for the record, when did you join the staff?
February 71st.
And do you know how you were recruited for the staff? Or
yes, I came to town with the committee for the re-election of the president in August of 73, and Jerry Jones was the day-to-day coordinator for Fred Malik at the political division in which I worked. And Jerry officially took over Fred Malik's function as special assistant for personnel. He asked me to join the staff.
Where had you been before coming to Washington?
Most recently had been with Louis Nunn in his campaign for governor of Kentucky, and served with him in the governor's office until early 71, when I left to become the state coordinator for an individual that sought to succeed him as another Republican governor. Then in 72, I came up here with Cameron.
Could you describe what your responsibilities were at the time you came? In other words, how they were described to you on your assignment in the White House personnel office?
In terms of being the administrative officer of the division and the coordinator of much of the political input that was to be focused on candidates coming to this office for non-career positions in the administration.
We have interviewed a number of people from the personnel office, but most people seem to fall into the category of either recruiter or liaison. Your unit, the only time I've seen it in print described is in a National Journal article where you mentioned the operational office. Is that synonymous with administrative office in this case?
The operations unit would be considered that. It was another division under Jones that filled in with the liaisons who worked with the various departments and agencies, and the recruiters who had specific search assignments for a particular vacancy. This particular part of the Jones operation was separate from those other two functions and worked in an operational sense in terms of the administrative function and in an operational sense in terms of bringing together input from outside, from the Hill, from the minority leadership on the Hill, from congressmen and senators and their staff, from the Republican National Committee, from the state party people, their recommendations about candidates for non-career positions.
Were you merely receiving the information when a congressman wanted to recommend someone for a position in the White House, or were you going out and asking for their recommendations on specific candidates or candidates in general?
More the former, although naturally being in the office where there were certain vacancies that we were openly searching for candidates for. On occasions I would go out and solicit candidates also from people that I tended to work more closely with. The recruiters in the White House personnel operation would be the ones who most actively went out and sought candidates on a regular basis for vacancies. The liaisons who worked with particular departments and agencies would have done it in a more restricted manner, using recruiters as a resource in their search. I tended to do less of the initiating of searches for candidates, although I did some with the various groups that I've indicated.
Were you ever, like the recruiters, given an assignment to find candidates for a specific position, or was this only?
No, it would have been different. It would have been more. Whereas the liaisons each work with a set of departments and agencies, and whereas the recruiters work on an assignment by assignment basis, my involvement and the office that I headed was sort of an ongoing input that related to the general flow rather than a specific search or a specific department or agency. The office, from an administrative standpoint, the office that I was directing controlled the administrative process, the process whereby the input was collected from various political sources for candidates that were being seriously considered, be it the RNC, the Republican National Committee, or the particular members of the Congress that related to jurisdictional appropriations committees, or the home states of the candidates, or the input that came from state party people. We also did the conflict. We coordinated with Jane Vandenhire and the FBI office on all the FBI investigations. We coordinated with Fred Fielding's office. So Fred Fielding and subsequently his replacement with the legal counsel's office on all the conflict and investigation work that was done on people who were in the pipe stream for presidential appointments. So our administrative function dealt with the entire flow of candidates that would be coming into serious consideration for presidential appointments and getting this other input from other parties that were relevant. Beyond the administrative input, the role that I was playing was sort of an ongoing liaison for comments from the political sources related to whatever input they wanted to make at a particular time, given their interest and recommendation.
What were some of these political sources that you were contacting?
Well, we regularly worked with the minority leadership on the Hill, the minority leader of the House and the minority leader of the Senate. So they were tied into our process whereby we made them aware of vacancies at the highest level and welcomed from them recommendations that they or their colleagues had for good candidates for these positions. Beyond that, when a candidate was in the pipe stream for serious consideration, then we would get input back from various members of the Congress, particularly the ranking Republicans on the particular committees that dealt jurisdictionally with the subject matter, or the Appropriations Committee that focused on that particular department or agency where the position was in question. And in that regard, we worked with the RNC in getting this input back in the process whereby final decisions were made within the White House Personnel Office and then on to the Hague level for Hague and presidential decision making.
Did you seek recommendations from, for instance, the congressional delegation from the state that the candidate was from, or local officials?
We would get opinion about the candidates who were very serious contenders from the Republican senators, from the state in which they were voting residents, from the congressmen who represented the district from which they came, perhaps from the Republican state party of the state from which they came. And that became, working with the Republican National Committee, that became the political input that went into the process whereby final decisions were made about candidates for non-career positions.
How did you gather this information physically? Was it written in a...
Well, generally it would be more verbal. Through a clearance process, we worked with the Republican National, my office worked with the Republican National Committee, which did the staff work. in contacting these particular groups to get their comments and suggestions about candidates being seriously considered for high-level positions. Supplementing that was the normal input that would be made through written communication, that would come where they had a special interest in going further and expressing their sentiments one way or the other about a candidate.
Could you describe your staff organization in your immediate office?
Well, I had one person who served as a general staff assistant to me, another person who was in charge of the clearance process flow, that is coordinating the specific inputs that we would be getting back from back through the RNC, through the FBI, and through conflict of interest. The clearance process, once you get the person beyond the substantive competence for the job, the other checkoffs that you're dealing with are political input, security coming back to the FBI, and conflicts of interest coming back to the White House Legal Counsel's office. And one of the persons who worked with me coordinated that input. There were two of us.
Could you name the staff under you?
Pam McCormick was the staff assistant. Julie Robin handled the clearances. Amelia Lucart and John Cante up to during the period when I was most involved with these dimensions, did the coordinating work on correspondence. Canty would do the coordinating work on correspondence coming in and being distributed through the White House, as well as the filing as it went out. And Amelia would have been the keeper of the records on the presidential appointees and the transmittals for final signature and action, and the secretary.
Would you have been involved on all presidential appointments that
sure.
came through during the time period between you?
During the time period that I was actively involved with all dimensions of this.
And what roughly is that?
February 73 to maybe February 74.
What was this break, or what was the change in your role following February of 74?
I began to just focus more on, I guess it would be closer to say early April, at which point Jones was starting to leave, and I was beginning to decide about where to go, and the Reimer team started to take over and transition.
Mm-hmm. So it's just when the transition,
a little longer than a normal transition, but mm-hmm. Up till, I'm transitioning at that point. The Reimer organization began to fill in at that time, and Sam Schulhoff took over functions that I had as well. The office was somewhat reorganized with the Reimer. With Sam Schulhoff coming in as Reimer's deputy, he absorbed, there was a reorganization within the office, and feeling of sorts what I've been doing part of that in the transition.
To go back to this administrative operation that you were handling, did you make a final evaluation on the candidates? In other words, did you assimilate and collate all of this information that you were gathering from these various sources on a candidate and make a recommendation to Jerry Jones or to the recruiters?
Well, yeah, our input would go back. We would go back with Jones and with the liaison on the input that we would make given what we've gotten back from the political sources. You've got the security and the FBI, which if they come back negative, can preclude the appointment as a matter of policy, if not law. The political input becomes one factor. That's the difference between that stream than the other two. So the political input becomes one consideration and what ultimately becomes a judgment over which of your several candidates is, all things considered, best suited to take on that role. Mm-hmm. And that becomes incorporated in the Jones recommendations to Hague for action on a particular spot.
So your major focus really was on this political input, and then you coordinated
administrative coordination of the communications coming into the office, administrative coordination of the FBI and the security, and ongoing liaison with the political elements that would be working with us, particularly the RNC for this regular common opinion about candidates. And then beyond that, one of the things that I did, that I came in to do and I ended up doing for Jones was more extensive liaison work with the Hill, with the RNC, with the State Party, these streams that were particularly important in 1973 coming after the campaign to begin with, and some of which became even more central in the flow after certain Watergate problems affected the White House's operation. So that it necessitated, we made a greater effort to work with the Hill. And in that regard, I was doing staff work for Jones and filling in where he couldn't with input that was coming back to us from members of Congress and their staff, from the White House Congressional Relations Shop during the 73 and early 74 candidates for non-correspondence.
Did you work through congressional liaison?
Both.
I'm in the formal congressional liaison office in the White House, Phil Timmons' office.
Well, I did extensive work with them in coordinating our operations and in following up on recommendations that they were putting into our system, as well as direct contact with members of Congress and their staff.
You mentioned now the congressional liaison and, of course, the coordination of people like Fred Freeling and Jane Gannonauer. Were there other offices in the White House complex that you coordinated or worked frequently with?
Well, by virtue of my sort of coordinating role in the administrative and political channels, our office tended to do the follow-up on recommendations that were coming to us from Mr. White House staffers. On occasion, I was working for Rudy at his shop, or Stan Scott at his shop. candidates that they had for consideration.
Was that usually the case if they're recommending a candidate?
Yeah, they're recommending a candidate, yeah.
You didn't routinely ask their recommendation for candidates?
No.
Which had been already
no.
suggested?
Well, one of the things we did running through the clearance process was that where they were above a certain level, that the candidate, the vacant, the position was above a certain level, we would go to various, as part of our clearance process, we would get input from various White House staffers, like all congressional relations candidates for departmental spots, for example. We would get a Bill Timmons salary and opinion. Women above a certain level, we were going to Ann Armstrong, but blacks, we were going to Stan Scott, that kind of process. See, and our office as the administrative political coordinating section also kept up with non-career positions in the departments and agencies that were not presidential appointees, but departmental appointees. You get about 520 presidential appointees. You're familiar, have you learned?
I couldn't reel them off to you, but...
You get about 520 presidential appointees, and then another 2,000 to 2,500 people who serve at the pleasure of the department office, non-career position. And the president can't hire or fire those people, but they generally work with us for getting a final White House sign-off before hiring them. So when they've got people that they want to put in as a special assistant to the solicitor or a deputy assistant secretary or a private secretary to an assistant secretary, all of which are non-career positions, they will send that candidate his papers over to us. They come to the office that I headed, and we would run the normal checks, getting opinion about those people. And to the extent that we had no objections, there would be a sign off going back saying we concur, and they would proceed and appoint that person. Where there were objections, then we would sit down and talk the thing out and see what became the final decision.
Did you make recommendations on appointments in the department?
And we, in our office, did a lot of, we got a lot of, many of the candidates that would come in from the Hill, from congressional relations, from other White House offices that wouldn't slot as presidential appointees, our office did the coordinating work on getting them out to departments and agencies for consideration. We would do that through the liaison.
Were there particular departments that you worked more closely with?
No, we wouldn't directly send them to any department. We would sort of be the administrative center where they came in and where, depending upon our evaluation of them, we would then route them out to a liaison office, and they would then, in turn, get them out into a particular department or agency.
Did you work more closely with the liaison then than you did with the groups?
I would not have worked extensively with the liaison there, with the recruiters. Mm-hmm. We worked more closely with the liaisons, and they're sort of the administrative coordinator. What was coming in, the liaisons, Jones, and a lot of other White House offices, very good.
And another thing, just so that I'm reading you right, you reported directly to Jerry Jones. Were there any other areas that you became involved in just as a result of being here? Any special projects that you worked on while you were here?
Special projects.
Well, that's a very ambiguous term, but it's meant to be just the out of the ordinary kinds of things that people get drawn into if something comes up that has been a specialization of yours in the past. The White House will sometimes draw upon a task force group of people, or it doesn't even have to be a formal group.
Oh, not particularly.
I'm just throwing the question out because we find so often that someone has become very involved for a period of 3 months or something project which really had no relation at all to their job. And we go back, and we will go back 20 years from now sooner and find these papers with staff member's name on it, which...
No, my tenure here would have been primarily in the non-career personnel club.
Did you do any traveling?
No.
And probably no speaking because of the nature of
it. Oh, not out of town. Few appearances for Pam Pal, close-up sessions, and a couple of talks with groups outside, but no heavy schedule like Bruce Hershens that are following the dolphins. Or like Nola Smith, who did a heavy amount of speaking.
Are there any particular areas that you can think of which either in terms of a specific assignment or a specific candidate, I'm not asking for you to name people so much as to think about areas that might not be well documented, which would be of interest to an in-depth oral history project. Possibly even just a general observation on some of the aspects of your work here that might be of interest. Well, we'll wait and give you a chance to think about it for a while.
I was with Louie Nunn from the beginning of his administration and did a lot of work in the staffing field for him. I've staffed a lot of campaigns, been involved with staffing of a lot of campaigns. It's a tremendously difficult function to perform well, and you generally, you're very often frustrated with not being able to succeed consistent with your aspirations. But a governor or a president particularly is so overwhelmed with the range of his responsibility that some of the most critical decisions that you make, except for those monumental historical moves that have an impact long run, but some of the most important decisions that a chief executive makes are those that relate to staffing and the key positions and the people that have filled it, because the nature of the office of chief executive is such, the nature of the life of White House staff is such, regardless of its size, that those 520 presidential appointees get tremendous impact over policy, over the tenure of their service. And thus, it becomes very important not only that the you find people that are competent, that are substantively qualified to do the job, that know how to deal with the complex responsibilities that they're going to have and the difficult elements that they have to cope with. But your presidential appointees are your keys to developing and carrying out the policies and the political philosophies that government's all about. That when a person's elected president, one of your major objectives is shaping the policy direction of the nation. And you're able to deal with the major national and international currents only from the Oval Office and the White House complex, that the significant dimensions of policy in this far-ranging government are going to be shaped by those 520 presidential appointees. So that if you're really going to make the most of your mandate when you're elected chief executive to shape and develop policies for the country, then you have to somehow find and staff with people whose hearts and minds share those objectives. And it's a very difficult process. So that, you know, when you talk about oral history projects, I think it's within that realm that I think is the greatest challenge for people who want to master the operation of government. You know, you get all the commotion about loyalty. How much loyalty does a president expect of his subordinates and his appointees? And to me, you're difficult. You know, the easy way is to say you want bright, creative people who are doing their thing. But the president is the only person in the executive branch who is elected by the people. The only person who is responsive and responsible to the electorate. The only person who has the mandate to directly shape policy. And one of his prerogatives is to make appointments of people who share his political and philosophical persuasion about the direction in which the nation should go. Because the reason why he has appointees is that he cannot in any way run the government himself. And clearly, easily, it is easy to say that a president wants his appointees, all of his non-career staff in the White House and in the departments, to come forward with great ideas and new suggestions and to speak their minds. But that's a different thing from saying that a president wants and must have non-career appointees who share in their hearts and in their minds a similar orientation to what they think that the president to what they think ought to be the national policy direction. And this is the tough. This is the difficult part of staffing the government. That in the flurry and in the sound and the flurry, sound and the fury of the White House and the complex of forces that are making an impact, be it the Hill or the constituent groups that are interested in appointments, or the media, of the department and agency official that the president be able to staff the government with people who are not only good enough and honest enough to handle the job, but that they are going to be consistent with the directions which he was elected to try and follow and create.
The only thing I can think of that I didn't ask you is, and maybe if you were out of the general flow after Weimer's office came and was well established, but did you see any significant change in the operation from the transition from Jerry Jones to David Weimer?
Nothing of historical note. You know, it's a different time. You know, there's a natural disruption when there's a transition in an office. And most of the people who came in with Jerry came in early 73 and had either left or in the process of leaving, having run the course. So in the course of the whole office turning over, all the liaisons changing, there's naturally going to be a disruption while the new regime, new office stabilizes and people catch up. You have slightly different considerations in some respects now than you did in early 73. It was at the beginning of a new administration. There was a large turnover in presidential appointees, so that you had tremendous numbers of vacancies because of the wholesale acceptance of resignations. Now you're dealing more with attrition, turnover, normal turnover, filling vacancies. So you staff according to your needs at a particular time. This is a different era. And you had certain crunches in 73 that you don't have now. What with the large number of vacancies as well as the large number of people who were eager to join the administration coming out of the campaign year. You don't have those factors now, but now you have a different atmosphere in town. You have a fragmented government, you have department and agency heads with tremendous autonomy, a lot more involved in the personnel process. You have a White House that naturally pays more attention to congressional input because presidential appointees subject to Senate confirmation have to be confirmed by the Senate. So it's tied up more with larger problems of government than specific orientations toward administration of this office.
Where are you going to meet this staff?
I'm going over as a special assistant to the Solicitor of the Interior.
And for our record, do you have a permanent address where you might be reached 8 years from now?
Kentucky is my home. I don't have a residence back there, but I have a voting residence there where my father is.
Well, a family address is very often the best thing for a permanent address.
1804 Klein Court, KLINE, Louisville, Kentucky.
And that's in care of your parents?
George Carroll.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Not really. Okay. Like that.
Well, thank you very much.